CBS News Brief. Deadly Hurricane Beryl is expected to make landfall in Jamaica tomorrow. CBS's Tom Hansen in Montego Bay.
This is shaping up to be a powerful storm, even if it has been downgraded from a Category 5. That Category 4, no joke, that is 130 miles per hour to 165 mile per hour winds.
For those in the early stages of Alzheimer's, CBS's Alexander Tin reports the FDA has approved a new treatment from Eli Lilly.
One thing that makes this drug different is that Eli Lilly found patients were able to stop taking the drug after as little as 6 months, based on brain scans.
With growing calls for President Biden to drop out of the White House race after his debate performance, Vice President Kamala Harris says she's proud to be Biden's running mate, and she also tells CBS News that after the Supreme Court's immunity ruling,
we have to take seriously the stakes of this election in terms of the thought that we could have a president in the White House who thinks he's immune.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
On the next Midday Magazine, we spend the entire hour with our good friends from the Wood County Sheriff's Department. Sheriff Sean Becker will be with us and Lieutenant Scott Sager. 4 to 5 right here at WFHR.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The new chancellor at the University of Wisconsin in La Crosse is on the job. James Beebe started work Monday. He replaces Joe Gao, who was fired last December for making online pornography with his wife. Gao is still fighting to keep his tenured professorship at UWL. The Biden administration wants to increase tariffs on $18 billion worth of imports from China. Arthur Stamoulis is with the Trade Justice Education Fund. He says the CHIPS Act and the Inflation Reduction Act have been good for American manufacturing.
There were more new factories built in the U.S. in 2023 than at any point in the last three decades. And these tariffs are going to help protect that investment.
Stamoulis says the tariff plan would safeguard good-paying American jobs from unfair competition. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. On Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that basically that Donald Trump could have someone shot and killed on Fifth Avenue. That the president, the Nixon quote, if the president does it, that means that it's not illegal. That means future presidents are going to be criming. That's what it means. And I look at John Roberts, the guy who wrote the majority opinion, the guy who told us all about stare decisis and calling balls and strikes and how he believed in decided law. This is kind of a big freaking deal. The fact that you're now saying that the president cannot be prosecuted for, treason. Incitement of a riot, an insurrection, any of this stuff, as long as he can couch it in terms of it's an official act. Now, understand, the weird thing is, Roberts, in his decision, didn't do a very good job of defining what an official act is. And in fact, I'm going to leave that to the courts, of which they are horribly biased. Now, the folks that I've been talking to are like, Joe Biden should be doing this and Joe Biden should be calling up SEAL Team 6 and all this. And I'm going, no, this doesn't apply to Joe Biden. This is going to only apply to Donald Trump, because it seems It seems to me that they are right. They wrote this decision solely with Donald Trump in mind, knowing that he's probably going to be reelected and that he will then have, well, the power to kill a political rival. You know, Trump's famously quoted as saying, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. This decision doesn't prove him wrong. But what this decision does prove is if he gets someone else to do it, then, well, no, he's got immunity. He's got immunity. And so would that person, because they were acting under his orders. In my mind, I can't help but think of, so this is what fascism looks like? This is what happens when you have one-party rule, when you have... the degradation of the rule of law, and then being able to do all kinds of really crazy stuff under the, oh, the Supreme Court said so. Now, I look at what Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote. From this day forward, she wrote in her dissent, presidents of tomorrow will be free to exercise the commander-in-chief powers, the foreign affairs powers, and all of the vast law enforcement powers enshrined in Article 2, however they please, including in ways that Congress has deemed criminal and have potentially grave consequences for the rights and liberties of Americans. And my mind immediately goes to, if you hear I fell out of a fifth floor window, there aren't five floors in my building. I'm not someone who would jump because I don't bounce well. And I know that. Journalists, if you live on anything higher than the first floor, you might want to move. And you go, oh, but Rick, you're being hyperbolic. You know, Donald Trump would never do that. Really? Does anybody really feel confident giving Donald Trump the ability to do all of the criming he wants to do? As long as he can say it's an official act. Imagine. I mean, my mind was spinning today in all of the ways that Donald Trump could abuse this. And understand, future presidents, not just Donald Trump. And for my red hat wearing friends, understand, there's a chance down the road, maybe, possibly, that the red hat dictator doesn't stay around very long. And that someone else rises to power and then uses this against you. This is why having that balance of power, this is why having those checks and balances, the beauty of our system, so important. To now have a Supreme Court that tells us that they're going to be the final arbiter of every decision. Because clearly Roberts didn't define what an official act is. And we'll leave that to the courts. And as I said a moment ago, you know, if Democrats do it, not an official act. If Trump does it, official act. This gives the courts an enormous amount of power over the executive branch. On Friday, we saw that they overturned the Chevron deference, giving the Supreme Court and the judicial branch an enormous power over the executive and regulatory branch and administrations. And I would argue even Congress. We're seeing the kind of out of control Supreme Court that I'll be honest, I've never been on the, not entirely on the, we've got to go and expand the court, but this has got to be a rallying cry for 2024. Whoever the next president is has got to look at expanding this court to bring some bit of sanity back. Or what we're going to see is not just the repeal of the 20th century, which they are doing quite effectively, thank you very much, but the repeal of the fundamental building blocks, the foundation of our democratic system, the foundation of what we all come to believe and expect from our government, from our society. This is a massive, tectonic shift of power to the Supreme Court and ultimately to their wealthy donors. You know, I had someone say, well, why do we care if, you know, if Donald Trump or of Clarence Thomas is taking trips with Harlan Crowe? Who cares? You know, they're friends. I go, well, I guess I just need new friends. Or there's something here. Maybe something we shouldn't be all in favor of. Now, you know, I go back to what my high school government teacher said. You know, government decides who gets what. Working people, can you look at our government and say, you know, we're getting from our government, from a Donald Trump government, from a Republican, from a conservative government, are we getting what we need, what we want? No. And look, you know, not to let Democrats off the hook either. They haven't been the greatest either, but they have not said, no, let's undo all of the progress of the 20th century. Let's return to the Lochner era, where no matter how desperate and hungry you are, it's your liberty to work for poverty wages and in desperate conditions, because that's your freedom. This is where we're heading back to, folks, and fast. This Supreme Court, this session, should be a wake-up call for the 2024 election. And I know everyone's crazy. Oh, you know, Joe Biden this, Joe Biden that. At this point, the only thing stopping us from a full fascistic society are the Democrats. And I need them to be tougher. I need them to step forward. And I need them to ball up their little digits and get in there and fight a little bit. Don't just offer to hold my coat in the street fight, but actually get into it and mix it up and save our democracy from this kind of assault. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. When we come back, Jordan Barham's going to be here to share some thoughts on, well, the Chevron deference and the end of that. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday I spent a little time talking about the Chevron doctrine, which, you know, pretty simply stated, said if Congress didn't specifically lay out, you know, specific, you know, regulations, enforcement of whatever it is that they've signed, that the expertise of the agency over who are supposed to oversee this stuff, that they would then be the one to write, you know, regulatory changes and enforce and, you know, do all the things that we've kind of expect from like our EPA, from OSHA, from, you know, different regulatory bodies and how they enforce and write rules. And it seemed to work pretty well for working people. Corporations always squealing. And now you've got this Supreme Court case that has wiped all of that out, and again consolidating power in the hands of the court, not in the hands of experts. And here to share some thoughts on if this is a big deal or not, or I'm just, you know, making much ado about nothing, I've asked our good friend Jordan Barham to come talk with us, former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA during the Obama years. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be here, Rick.
So how big of a deal is this? I know this sounds really technical. The average person goes, yeah, what's the big deal? Somebody will be overseeing it. Why does it matter? How big of a deal is this?
Well, it is a big deal. And it's a big deal, I mean, for in my area of work, which is occupational safety and health, keeping workers safe in the workplace. I mean, Congress passed a law in 1970 creating the Occupational Safety and Health Administration and gave that agency the authority to issue standards to protect workers. And these can be standards that protect workers against falls or standards that protect workers against chemicals or some infectious diseases.
Or heat.
Heat. I mean, they're working on one now for heat. They're working on one for infectious diseases, workplace violence. And the law basically, you know, tells OSHA, you know, what it has to do to issue a standard. They have to be economically and technologically feasible, for example. And, you know, then OSHA issues the standard, and inevitably, with every single OSHA standard ever issued, corporate America sues OSHA, the Chamber of Commerce and all their buddies. And, you know, OSHA usually wins. And why is that? The reason OSHA usually wins is that, you know, basically because of the so-called Chevron doctrine, which, as you said, says that if Congress, you know, either hasn't anticipated every possible problem, every possible hazard, for example, you know, COVID or heat, workplace violence, you know, then it's up to the, or if Congress is being somewhat ambiguous, then it's up to the experts in the agencies that have been assigned the task to figure that out and develop standards or regulations. The only criteria basically being is that they're reasonable, you know, based on how the law is written. And that's how the courts have operated since for the last 40 years, since the Chevron doctrine has been, was issued. And basically, you know, so again, OSHA gets sued every time it issues a standard, goes to court, and OSHA almost always wins because, you know, OSHA puts an incredible amount, most agencies do, put an incredible amount of energy into making sure that the standards, which they work on for years and for OSHA sometimes decades, will pass legal muster and you know, will have satisfied every requirement and can be seen as reasonable according to the experts in the agency.
Right. To highlight that, if I could for a second, you know, the last time we had you on, one of your great disappointments of the Biden administration is they haven't issued any of these new regulations or any of this new stuff because they are doing the due diligence. This isn't something that just happens overnight, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. You know, they talk about, you know, they talk about faceless, you know, unelected bureaucrats. You know, well, first of all, it's not just bureaucrats that are working, so-called bureaucrats. It's these are scientific experts who not only have degrees, but have many, many years of experience working on these issues. They don't just do it themselves. We would work hand in hand again for years with the solicitors, with the lawyers at OSHA. It goes under White House review. And that's, again, where this unelected bureaucrat thing is BS, basically, because, sure, I mean, bureaucrats are unelected, but they work for the president. The president is elected. There's not a bureaucrat sitting in a little office issuing standards. It all goes to White House review, and nothing gets out unless the elected president approves it. So there's a lot of work that goes in, a lot of expertise that goes into this, and much more expertise than any judge or certainly any Supreme Court justice could possibly ever have. You know, there's really no choice but to rely on the experts. And I think that was Congress's original intent when it passed the Occupational Safety and Health Act.
Right. Now, as slow as we've talked about, as slow as these new regulations are, as slow as this stuff is, could you argue that by doing away with this deference, it's going to make it even that much slower and that much more difficult to enforce things?
Well, it'll definitely make it slower because now, I mean, you know, before basically OSHA just had to be reasonable, and you had to basically comply with all the different requirements, and that took a long time. Now it's a little harder. I mean, you know, what can you do? Because you have all these crazy, basically Trump-appointed judges out there around the country, especially in Texas, who will find anything pro-worker, you know, to be unconstitutional and send it right up to the Supreme Court. So, you know, it's hard to have any criteria, any objective criteria that you have to use, because it's at the whim of a judge who may think, you know, he or she knows more than the experts at OSHA. And you're talking about, you know, very technical issues. I mean, we issued, you know, when we were there, we issued a silica standard. So, I mean, you know, what's the level of exposure that is quote unquote safe? Should workers be required to use engineering controls like wetting the dust down or respirators or both? You know, what kind of training? What if a judge decided, well, training's not too important. I think, you know, I don't like training. I never like going to school. I think I'll throw this one out. You know, they don't need training. Or, you know, respirators, they sound good. Workers should just wear respirators all day instead of wetting it down. I mean, the judges don't really know anything. They don't have the expertise. That's what actually, if you read the original Chevron decision, it admitted judges do not have the expertise. We have to rely on the experts. And that's what Congress's intent was. And now basically you have, you know, so much business influence in the courts, and you have a Congress that never in a million years, you know, would pass something like the Occupational Safety and Health Act. So instead of all that, they're trying to go after the underpinnings of the so-called regulatory state to you know, kind of cut out these regulations at their core, because they can't, you know, they obviously don't have the votes to dismantle OSHA or EPA. So they're going at it this way through the judicial means. And unfortunately, we have justices in the Supreme Court and many judges in the lower courts. They don't care about workers. They don't care about worker safety. They don't care about the environment. They're totally at the, you know, the bid and call of America's business community. You know, they come out of the Federalist, you know, the Federalist program, and they do business's bidding. And this is, you know, although, you know, all the discussions about, you know, the courts in past elections have focused on abortion and, you know, birth control and some of, you know, civil rights, you know, corporate America doesn't give a shit about abortion. What they care about is being free to pollute, free to kill workers. And the way to do that is Chevron. This is what they've been working for, exactly, to get rid of Chevron.
Now, you know, it's interesting you brought up, you know, the EPA along with talking about OSHA, because it's the reason that I reached out to you. Everybody that I know is, you know, they're focused on OSHA. This is going to pollute our water. This is going to go back to polluting our air. And as, look, someone who grew up in Cleveland during the 70s, home of the Clean Air and Clean Water Act, you know, I remember the pollution. I remember a lake that was dead. I remember stories of a river that was on fire. I remember the kind of you know, basically unregulated pollution that that was allowed to exist. And I fear we head back in this direction. Are my fears accurate? I mean, is this potentially something that we could return to, or am I just being hyperbolic?
Well, yeah, no, it's, I mean, you know, everything that we value that makes life, you know, worth living in the United States, which is, you know, I mean, workplace safety, clean air, clean water, food that's not going to poison you, consumer rights, those are all basically based on laws that passed by Congress and regulations issued by the agency that detail the more general laws that are passed by Congress. Yeah, so all of that is at risk. You know, and it could get worse, quite frankly, because the next thing, you know, corporate America wants to go after, and there are some cases maybe wending their way to the Supreme Court, is the so-called non-delegation doctrine in the Constitution, which basically says that, you know, Congress can't delegate any of its authority to other branches of government. And, you know, what they're saying now is that by Congress creating these agencies, not just issuing standard, but creating these oversight agencies, is a violation of the non-delegation doctrine. And if the court were to throw that out, it would not just, you know, make it harder to issue OSHA standards. It would basically eliminate OSHA and eliminate EPA or any agency that protects Americans.
So as I've been saying for the longest time, there are folks who want to repeal the 20th century. This is what you're talking about.
Exactly. And, you know, just, I mean, and this is, you know, I mean, I don't even think corporate America realizes this, but, you know, this, these regulatory agencies, first of all, they add certainty to corporations, because you don't have things going back and forth and just a free for all where the good companies are maybe spending more money to protect workers, to protect the environment, and the bad companies are getting away scot-free. But I mean, you know, this is the only thing that stands between us and unrestrained capitalism. You know, I mean, just letting, you know, going back to the 19th century and, you know, when the robber barons could do whatever they wanted and nobody had anything to say about it. You know, we've supposedly progressed a lot in the last 100 years, at least since the New Deal, in terms of protecting Americans' food and water and everything else. But you know, they want to take us right back to where, you know, freedom stands for corporate freedom to pollute, you know, to poison and to kill.
No, it's interesting. You know, we've come to expect as citizens, you know, a certain baseline. And, you know, I see the Supreme Court basically undoing the 20th century, as I've said. And wiping away that certainty that we have as consumers, as workers, as citizens, that there's someone looking out for our best interest, that the products that we use aren't going to kill us, that the water we drink is safe, that the air we breathe is safe. And this seems to me an undoing of this. You know, and I was just thinking as you were talking about, you know, we took a coal mine tour a couple years ago. And, you know, the person giving the tour was explaining what the working conditions were 100 years ago. You know, how horrible, you know, you'd be knee deep in muck of feces and animal and human. You know, the slurry, just a whole bunch of horrible. And the woman who was standing behind us said, well, where was OSHA? There was no OSHA back then. Yeah, and it was one of those moments where I go, this is where we've come to expect a certain level of certainty from our government. And it seems to me that this ruling is going to undo all of that.
Yeah, and people take all that for granted. They take for granted that there are, you know, government agencies looking out for safe water and safe workplaces and safe food. And you know, it's unfortunately even at the best, I mean, the government agencies, given funding and resources and everything, have a hard time doing that. But you know, what's going to happen when all of that disappears, or if all of that disappears? And that's exactly, you know, where the business community is trying to steer this country.
Because the reason I ask you this, Jordan, because I've had a number of people go, well, yeah, they wouldn't do that. They're not going to pollute the water to where it catches on fire again. You know, they're not going to make unsafe working conditions so people are dying in mass like they used to. They're not going to do those things. That can't happen here.
Well, okay, yeah. I mean, unless it increases their profits, you know. And when you have, you know, Supreme Court justices that are going on, hundreds of $1,000s junkets with their corporate friends, I mean, they will do whatever they want to satisfy their friends, and that's who, you know, is now stacked in the Supreme Court. You know, if Trump gets elected again, he could potentially have two or three more Supreme Court appointments. You know, and he'll appoint some 35-year-olds there. And, you know, I mean, it'll be until our grandchildren are grown up before we have a chance at a decent court again. You know, this is serious stuff, and it's serious stuff that, you know, unlike some of the things that, you know, Republicans and Democrats would do, can't just be undone in the next election. You know, these judges are appointed for life. You know, some of these guys could be there for another 30, 40 years.
Yeah. I mean, this was decided law for 40 years. John Roberts said he was going to call balls and strikes. He believed in stare decisis. And yet everyone that I know was predicting that this was going to go clearly the way that it went, because this court clearly doesn't believe in decided law. This is a radical court, as you pointed out, a corporate court. And you know, we're going back to the bad old days.
Yeah, and you know what their solution is? Well, you know, if we think all this stuff is so important, then Congress should pass this stuff. Congress should issue regulations, which is
Have you noticed Congress? Yeah. Have you been paying attention to Congress?
I mean, Rick, let me tell you something. I was just doing a little research. Do you know when the Occupational Safety and Health Act was passed in 1970? You know what the vote was in the Senate? It was 83-3. Three senators voted against the Occupational Safety and Health Act, two Republicans and one Democrat. And even in the House, only 25 House members voted against the Occupational Safety and Health Act. Can you imagine this Congress passing anything like that these days?
No.
It's unbelievable. So yes, I mean, Congress did pass those laws. They did intend the agencies to have that kind of discretion. That's why they passed them. That's why they created these agencies. So they're, you know, again, these guys in the Supreme Court now are, and one woman there are basically, you know, not only undermining, you know, all of these protections, all of these safeguards, but they're basically trying to rewrite history.
So last question I've got for you, given what we've been talking about and what I think we both fear for the future, is there a path forward to mitigate some of the risk? Is there a way to, is there any hope, I guess, is where I want to go?
Well, I guess there are two avenues, neither of which are easy. I mean, one is obviously more unions, you know, so they can write protections into their workplace. That's, you know, as far as workplace safety and health, it doesn't help too much with the environment. You know, but we also, you know, we have elections. We also have to elect people who are concerned about these issues. And I can't believe that even most Republicans want their water to be polluted. They don't want their family members to die in the workplace. They don't want their kids eating poisoned food. So one hopes that, you know, at some point they'll realize, you know, this is happening. And obviously, we need to keep, you know, Donald Trump out of the White House and keep the Senate in Democratic hands, because otherwise you're going to have many, many more of these crazy judges out there. They're going to be making these crazy decisions and sending them to a, you know, ever more crazy Supreme Court, where he could have, again, two or three more appointments. So that probably is number one in the priorities, making sure Donald Trump doesn't get reelected, and making sure we keep the Senate.
No, I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. I don't believe, you know, Republicans want to drink dirty water or breathe bad air or, you know, let in toys and all that stuff. I just don't think they believe that it's possible.
And there's also just reflective kind of pro-business, anti-regulatory stuff that people for some reason believe.
Crazy times. But Jordan, I appreciate the time. Thanks for giving us an update on this, and I hope to talk to you again really soon.
All right, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
Jordan Barab, former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA. You should check out his website, jordanbarab.com/confined space, if you want to take a look at the latest deaths on the job, the latest, well, one of the only guys in the country telling you how unsafe our workplaces are. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Scattered storms this evening, then clearing overnight, and lows in the low 60s. Sunny and less humid for tomorrow, nice day with a high in the mid-80s. Mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms for the 4th of July, highs in the upper 70s, and rain still likely on Friday, currently at 62 degrees.
100 days, 144,000 minutes. The countdown to the November presidential election is on, and Maggie Dawn is counting too as she continues her special segment, Biden's Top 100.
Having heard from each and every one of you, I should start talking about what President Biden is proposing us for his second term.
Biden's Top 100 continues. You're invited to be part of it too. Call or text the Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays starting at 2, across the Civic Media Radio Network and the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the email box full of thoughts on, well, last Thursday's, I'm not going to call it a debate, whatever that was. Lots of thoughts on what Biden should do, what he shouldn't do, what the Democrats should do. Not a great place for Democrats to be in right now. And here to share some thoughts on, well, that and, well, Monday's Supreme Court decision and the giant mess that, well, the Trump court has created. I've asked our good friend Chris Hahn to come talk with us. Chris is a syndicated radio host and host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. You can check out his work over at ChristopherHahn.com. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, man. How you doing?
So let's throw it out there. Thursday. Predictable.
Yeah.
I mean, predictable.
I don't think I would have predicted that Joe Biden would have been that bad. In fact, I was all over television and radio talking about how the bar was so low that he couldn't help but tiptoe over it. And he didn't. He did not tiptoe over it. And I think that we all know what we saw. And I want to just point this out. If Joe Biden was in a coma, I would vote for him over Donald Trump.
Without question.
But this is not about me. This is about the 6-8% of voters in 5 or 6 states that are going to make the difference in this election. And they know what they saw on Thursday night, and they cannot unsee it. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to go vote for Donald Trump, right? I mean, if you look at the polling over the last couple of days, 74%, 72% of Americans say that Joe Biden shouldn't run, but 54% of Americans say that Donald Trump shouldn't run. That's not a good thing. I also see that as an opportunity should Joe Biden give the Democratic Party that opportunity. And nobody could tell Joe Biden not to run but Joe Biden, right? The decision is his. He has the delegates to the convention. He can refuse to serve or to refuse to run. He could allow those delegates to be released, and somebody else could be chosen as the Democratic nominee for president of the United States. And I believe that if you choose almost anyone who is a solid performer, they would beat Donald Trump, because the American people do not want to elect Donald Trump. But unfortunately, more Americans are not going to want to elect Joe Biden.
No, as I said yesterday on the show, Chris, I said, look, I think Joe Biden will put the country first. I believe he is that kind of person, whereas we know Donald Trump will put Donald Trump first in every scenario.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And right now, putting the country first for Joe Biden means he needs to step aside. And it's a...
No way he can recover from that?
No. Nope. Look, I put it out there that if he wanted to try to start to recover, he needs to immediately start doing press conferences, long press conferences. He needs to be appearing in long form interviews with journalists who are not going to just give him softball questions. And he needs to do it right now. Giving 1 minute speeches, 2 minute speeches to adoring crowds right off a teleprompter is not going to convince the American people that he is up to the job of being president of the United States. Joe Biden couldn't respond to simple questions at the debate. Joe Biden was asked about abortion and he turned it into a question about immigration. Abortion is his strongest area. Immigration is his weakest. Joe Biden couldn't combat the numerous lies that Donald Trump put out there. He cannot prosecute the case for his own record to be president. I don't see it getting better. And I also would say this, that unfortunately, for the last couple of weeks, there have been lots of videos and lots of other things out there, you know, showing Joe Biden looking confused and looking old. And his people have said, well, these are cheap fakes. And maybe to some extent they were, but they all look like liars now, right? Even if they weren't lying, they look like liars. And they have committed political malpractice by putting a man on a debate stage that they didn't need to do. By the way, they didn't need to do this debate. They chose to do this debate. And they were not, they could talk about how he was tired or how he had a cold or how he was much better in practice. It doesn't matter. He is running for the hardest job on the planet. And you will not undo the damage that was done last week. He could try. He hasn't appeared to want to try. Right. There hasn't been many press conferences from Joe Biden. There hasn't been many long form interviews. The last time he gave a press conference was after the special counsel came out with that report. And I got to tell you, that was an unmitigated disaster in and of itself. It was bad.
So what do you say to the person who goes, look, they did this, you as a strategist, why choose to have a debate this early unless this was what you thought the outcome was going to be? Because you said no one could have predicted. The same thing I said when John Fetterman got on the stage during his Senate debate. I didn't think anyone who is a handler with any sense should have put him out on the debate stage.
Right.
And I don't think anyone should have put Joe Biden out in that situation. As you said, I would vote for Joe Biden in a coma because of all the people that he's put around him.
It's not about me and you. It's not about me and you.
And I get that.
It's about those 6% of people in Wisconsin and Michigan. And there are people who think that Michigan's lost at this moment. And we can't win without Michigan.
Right? Pennsylvania,
we might lose a Senate seat. We might lose a Pennsylvania Senate seat. This is a travesty. It's a tragedy. Joe Biden is a great man, has been a consequential and great president. He has a good heart. Now he has to put the country first and he needs to step aside for the good. Now, Republicans are going to fight that, try to make it a coronation of Donald Trump. And with this Supreme Court, who knows what will happen. But at the same time, I just don't think that we're winning this presidency this year with this man. And because we have to convince people in the middle, people not even in the middle, people who are undecided, people who swing. And how do you convince them? You know, the knock they had on him, unfortunately, was that he was too old to do the job. This was the biggest fear among those 6% of voters who are going to make up the difference in the election. It's why Joe Biden's not beating Donald Trump like a drum. Well, now those fears have been reinforced by the president himself. He chose to debate. He didn't have to debate. You know, don't tell me you were traveling the world the week before. You picked the date. You knew your schedule. It's sad, but it is where we're at. And I'm getting annoyed at some Democrats who are like, you know, treating this like a cult moment. You know, Donald Trump is a cultist. The party is all about Donald Trump on the right. The Democratic Party is not all about Joe Biden.
No.
It is not all about one person. It is about doing what's in the best interest of this country. And if we sacrifice the best interest of the country for one man, we are going to be living with Donald Trump as president, with new powers given to him by the Supreme Court, which should scare us all, having that power in that man's hand.
No, but I want to, before we go down to the Supreme Court thing, because I do want to ask
tiny,
you about
tiny little hands. Sorry. I'm not allowed to name call on TV, but this is a podcast.
Yeah, there you go. Here's the reality. This is the question I asked. You know, having it this soon, because the soonest debate I could find was September. We were in June. If this wasn't the outcome that some thought was possible, that you get this out of the way, if this bomb were to go off like this, you still have time. Do you think that was in the calculus of having it this soon? I'm curious why so soon.
I think so to some people, but I think that ultimately they were losing to Donald Trump, and they said they're losing to Donald Trump because people don't believe Donald Trump's actually running for president. Let's get him on the stage. Let's make sure people know he's running for president. I don't think they thought that Joe Biden would perform as poorly as he did. I mean, he's stepped up to the plate even this year in ways that people didn't expect him to, and he's performed well. But this was not good.
Yeah. So let me ask you about the Supreme Court decision on Monday, which, you know, is pretty substantial. I've got right-wing friends who are saying, no, it's not a big deal. It's just protecting a president who makes a decision from being maliciously prosecuted for official acts. You can still go after them for you know, that things that aren't official. What stops Joe Biden from going, you know, an official act is to save the country from Donald Trump, who is a clear and present danger, or the Supreme Court? I've seen your social media is full of what Biden should be doing with SEAL Team 6 and all of this stuff. How bad is this decision?
It's a horrible decision. And it is completely outside of what the framers to this Constitution fought for, right? This country was founded by men that were fleeing a king. They did not want to create a new king, an elected king. Kings do not give up power. And all Joe Biden or Donald Trump or somebody else that we haven't even thought of has to do now is tie whatever action he's doing or she's doing to an official act, and they cannot be prosecuted for it. They could be impeached, but we know how partisan this world is right now and how hard it would be to actually hold somebody accountable in this regard. It's a travesty. I'm a lawyer, went to law school. I read, you know, countless Supreme Court opinions when I was studying to be a lawyer. And I used to think of them as above politics. And right now what we have is what the framers were worried about: warring factions who are not thinking about the Constitution and what's in the best interest of liberty and justice and preserving rights, but warring factions that are interested in what's in front of them right now. And that Supreme Court did this not for the millennia to come, right? Gorsuch said that we're writing an opinion for the ages. They didn't write an opinion for the ages. They wrote an opinion for Donald Trump, for what was right in front of them right now. And it's pathetic. This is not the Supreme Court of even 15 years ago. This Supreme Court is basically a legislature in robes whose press releases are disguised as legal opinions. It's disgusting.
But, you know, how is it this going forward going to be any different than the past, since we've never, to my knowledge, ever prosecuted a president for anything that they've done in office? You know, how is this change what was the past?
This is why it was an opinion not for the millennia, but for what was right in front of them, from MAGA. We never had a president like Donald Trump who tried to, you know, overturn an election, who decided that they weren't going to return classified documents, that directed the Justice Department to write a fake letter about an election. And the Supreme Court cited that as an example of something that was okay. We've never had a president like that, and I hope we never have another president like that, but something's got to give here. This Supreme Court is not writing about the rule of law. And I agree that presidents and all people who work in government have to have some sort of qualified immunity for doing official things. But it needs to be a narrow scope. And what seems to be described here was not a narrow scope. And we'll see. It's going to go back to the trial court. And the trial court is going to have a hearing, an evidentiary hearing. And I would imagine they'll have it soon, probably in August or September, to determine whether Donald Trump was acting under his official act. This court made it harder to do that by saying that evidence of what was an official act can't be considered either. I don't know. I'm very, very discouraged today about what I saw.
So, you know, obviously now the most powerful branch of government, because we grew up going to, you know, civics class, going there were co-equal branches of government, the Balancing Act. The Balancing Act is now tilted heavily to the judiciary, you know, because they are now, you know, given the Chevron decision.
They got rid of the Chevron deference last week. And the Chevron deference gave a lot of authority to the agencies to interpret statute. In fact, you know, agencies would write the regulations. Now anybody could walk into federal court and say, I don't like the way this agency's interpret the statute. And now the court gets to determine if the statute's being interpreted properly. It's taken, to some extent, it takes some power away from the federal government and does put a check on the federal government, right? But to another extent, it just gums up the works, right? It slows things down. And it makes it easier for people who are trying to skirt the rules to skirt the rules. So now I would suggest that going forward, that members of Congress, when they propose a piece of legislation, should also propose the regulations to go along with that legislation. Because you can't just rely on the court to interpret it the way Congress intended.
One of the things I've always said about our labor law is that they're so badly broken that if you're advising a company on how to break a union, break the rules, you know, break the law, because the teeth are so so non-existent. There are no penalties, nothing really serious. Is it now going to be that of the future where if you're president, now breaking the law is the thing to do because not doing it would be political malpractice?
I guess if you're a Republican, you could get away with it at least while this 6-3 majority is there. But if you're a Democrat, you won't. Right. It's a partisan court. You know, Justice Roberts once said there aren't Democratic judges or Republican judges. They're just judges. That is a lie. That is not the case. And if this case was not about Donald Trump, we would not have gotten this decision from this court.
So
the last question. If the shoe was on the other foot, if this was Joe Biden appealing to the Supreme Court for the same exact thing, they would have ruled the other way.
I don't disagree with that. So last question I've got for you. You know, in looking at where we are and looking at this court, we're all told to believe that, you know, the court's, you know, blind.
It's not.
Is there hope for November? Blind.
What'd you say? Sorry.
Is there hope for November? I mean, look, this election is a big deal. The hope is that we get an election that we can. Now everything's up in the air for me right now. I'm looking at what the court's done.
Here's what I think.
I'm looking at what Donald Trump.
I'm going to tell you what I think is going to happen. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. I think that over the next 2 weeks, you're going to see a series of polls that show Joe Biden losing in swing states. I'm also going to see, you're going to see a series of polls that show down ticket Democrats having a really hard time because of Joe Biden. And the leadership, the Schumers, the Hakeem Jeffries, the Nancy Pelosi's of the world are going to go to the president and they are going to ask the president to withdraw. And I think Joe Biden will withdraw. Now, assuming that there is a airtight legal case that he's allowed to withdraw, which I think there is. But I think he will. I think that the polling is going to be here. You know, this conversation that they said, oh, he had a conversation with his family over the weekend, and they encouraged him to say, the conversation with your family is not whether to get out. The conversation with the family is about whether to get in.
Right.
Can we do this as a family? Do we want to have this sacrifice of being in the public eye? Once you're in, your family's not going to say, no, you're too old, dad, get out. They're not going to do that. That's not the family's job. And the family would be committing family malpractice to do that. I don't expect Jill Biden. Jill Biden's not the one who's got to tell her husband that it's time to hang it up. It's others.
Yeah.
You know, Clyburn, quite frankly, needs to get in there and have this conversation. Jim Clyburn. And he needs to be part of that conversation because Joe Biden wouldn't be president without him.
Yeah, I said yesterday, Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton, that's the ticket. Michelle Obama, because I think she'd be unbeatable. Hillary Clinton, because I think she would drive the right absolutely out of their minds.
She would drive them out of their mind, but I don't think that's happening either. Look, you can't count out Kamala Harris. I know that everybody wants to say that Kamala Harris, you know, is unpopular. Kamala Harris has been, you know, sitting in an office across the street from the White House for, you know, 3 years, not being given the opportunity to really shine. And if she's given the opportunity to go out there and shine, I think she'd actually be pretty effective. But I also think Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, would be an excellent. Josh Shapiro, your governor in Pennsylvania. You know, I think there are some people out there that we need to consider strongly here. And none of those people are going to be the ones to stand up get out, because whoever's holding the knife is going to be persona non grata probably forever.
Right, you're right.
But I think it is up to the leaders to get this done.
There you go. Chris, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
Anytime.
Chris Hahn, host of the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1822. That was the day that Denmark Vesey was hung for his role in allegedly plotting a slave rebellion in South Carolina. Vesey had been born into slavery in St. Thomas in the Caribbean. From there, he was brought to Charleston, South Carolina. He won the lottery and was able to purchase his freedom at the age of 32. Now a free man, Vesey worked as a skilled carpenter. He became a founder of a black congregation of the African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston. 4 years after it opened, authorities grew uneasy about the potential of the church to foster unrest among those under slavery. In response, they closed the church. Vesey and others began to organize black resistance to slavery. An informant revealed the plans before the uprising could take place. South Carolina authorities acted swiftly. Vesey stood trial and was found guilty. He was executed along with 35 of his supporters. The AME church was burned to the ground. Hysterical white leaders passed harsh new slave codes aimed at thwarting any future plots. Since his death, historians have debated the true extent of the plot and the evidence put forth at his trial. Vesey's name became a rallying cry in the fight against slavery. The church members continued to meet in secret. After the Civil War, the church formally took the name Emmanuel AME. The church became a symbol in the fight for black civil rights. In 2015, a white 21-year-old gunman murdered 9 people at the Emmanuel Church in a vicious hate crime.
Moses said, "Let my people go. If not, I'll smite your firstborn dead. Let my..."
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Monday, an interesting day. I got to tell you, I look at the Supreme Court decision that basically grants immunity to the president. Because I guess Nixon's question or comment that if the president does it, it's not illegal, is now law of the land. What Nixon did is, well, compared to what Trump did during his presidency, pikers. I mean, the sad reality is we have a Supreme Court right now that is totally bought, paid for, in the bag, and going to be very dangerous for the next, several couple of decades. And the question then becomes, how do you How do we deal with this? How do we, the people, reclaim power? This Supreme Court decision was terrible. It is a sad day for our democracy. It's a sad day for the country. It's a sad day for all of those things we grew up believing in. That everyone is equally subject to the law. No one being above the law. And now you have given the presidency absolute immunity from criminal prosecution as long as we deem them official acts. So if you tuck it into some kind of official act, treason, incitement of riot, insurrection. As long as we can say, hey, we were doing it in our official capacity, it's going to be completely legal. And oh, by the way, we've solidified the view that you cannot prosecute a sitting president. So if Trump wins in November, all of the cases that are pending will continue to pend. And then you got to wonder, with this newfound power, stop and think about, I tweeted out on Monday, so this is what fascism looks like. This is what it's going to look like. This is what having a dictator, a king, if you will, this is what this is going to look like if Donald Trump wins. Because does anyone believe he won't push the bounds of this ruling? Does anyone truly believe that that he's going to stay within the confines of historical norms? Of course we don't. Of course we know he's going to do, well, some pretty interesting and ugly things. Journalists, be prepared to be locked up. When there are no bounds and your mind is able to go into some places where we've never gone before, we're setting ourselves up. That's why this election is so very important. And as I said on the program Monday, I do believe Joe Biden will do what's in the best interest of the country. I support Biden's decision. If he decides to run, I will be behind him 100% because of the people that he's surrounded himself, the vision he has put us forward, moving us forward on, and the policies that the legislation they got passed through and the policies in the direction that we're going. This isn't about one person. This isn't about Joe Biden. This is about working people in this country getting a fair shot. This is about reinvesting in this country to hand this nation off to the next generation and giving them something worthy of inheriting. This is about much, much more than just two old guys. I'll be honest from the front, always thought Joe Biden was going to be a one-term president. He was going to come in, he was going to right the ship, he was going to do the things that he's done. And then he was going to say, I have given you the keys. You now take this car down the road. You drive the truck. You finish the journey. But like a lot of folks, we think we can do it. And I truly believe, Joe Biden thinks he can do it. I don't know that the American people think that. And I think Chris said it right. The two of us would vote for him even if he's in a coma because of the people that he has surrounded himself with. But it is time to think about. And the time is coming near. If we're to save this country and again, make it a place worth inheriting for our children and grandchildren. This could be, and I said this last year and the year before, this could be the last election of our lifetime. The last real one. Russia has elections. Iraq had elections. Dictators have elections. They win by 90% of the vote. Is that going to be our future? Now, the weird thing is I posed this to a friend and they were of the mindset, maybe that wouldn't be so bad. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad. As long as the trains ran on time, we had cheap gas, cheap prices. As long as we were okay. That's not democracy. I want to hear your thoughts. email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Do you think Joe should step aside? Maybe name a replacement that he would like to see? I want to hear your thoughts, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At Rick at therickSmithShow.com.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the